Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody, and happy Friday to you here on the best of the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Matt Catrillo here with you, wrapping up the week. Steve on vacation this week. He's always in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai, all new pre-owned inventory. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And every Friday show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Definitely time to go stock up. It's been so hot in the valley here this week. Still going to be a little bit humid into the weekend, but then once we get back to next week, going to be back in the upper 80s. So you want to stock up. Water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The Pickle Bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Six great flavors of slushies, definitely a need for those for this time of year. And, of course, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers as well. All of your drink needs, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. So we wrap up our final day of our best of shows here on the Steve Jones Show. Then we return on Tuesday. Monday is, of course, the 4th of July holiday, so we will have no show on Monday. So Tuesday we return to live shows and welcome Steve back from his much-deserved vacation. But today we're going to end the week with a bang as we relive Super Bowl week. And that was a fun week here on the show. In a couple minutes, we'll replay the professor, John Clayton. Then Kim Jones, we heard from her earlier this week on the show, recapping Penn State's Pro Day. Well, she also joined us during Super Bowl week because she covered the Tampa Bay Bucks, the eventual Super Bowl champs for NFL Network during Super Bowl week. So we'll replay that interview at 3:35. Then in the 4 o'clock hour at 4:06, it is Mount Carmel's own, the GM of the Kansas City Chiefs, Brett Veach, in probably our biggest interview this year. He was kind enough to join us during Super Bowl week as his team was getting ready to defend their Super Bowl title against the Tampa Bay Bucks. So we will replay that interview at 4:06 today. And then a special treat to close out the show and the week with Ray Dittinger, of course. You see him as the Eagles post-game live analyst on NBC Sports Philadelphia during the season. He's also on 94 WIP on the radio in Philly. And he just put out a new book called Finish Business, My 50 Years of Headlines, Heroes, and Heartaches. And it's basically a new memoir recapping the Eagles Super Bowl season and what that meant to him, his career, his family. He'll recap the touching moment he had with his son on the set of Post Game Live on NBC Sports Philly after the Eagles won the Super Bowl. Talk about his special relationship he had with the player he loved growing up, Tommy McDonald. All those wonderful stories, we'll recap that in the final half hour of the show today. That was really an enjoyable interview, so we'll replay that to close out the show and the week. But first, we kick things off again, reliving Super Bowl week this past year from Super Bowl 55 down in Tampa, Florida. We start with the professor, John Clayton, who joined Steve earlier this year.
Good to be with you. I got a dumb question. What part of Central Pennsylvania are you based?
I am in State College, where Penn State is, which you know so well.
Yes, I do. Haven't covered it, and because I was wondering if it was in St. Mary's, because in St. Mary's, that was my first writing assignment when I was in high school, because I wrote for the St. Mary's Daily Press and covered the Steelers. And this was in 1972, and as you know, as we've talked about, is that I covered Penn State for 1 year back in the late 70s, and it was one of the Joe Paterno's worst year, because they went 7-5 and got they went to the Liberty Bowl and lost and had a lot of off-season problems, and Joe kicked me off the beat after 1 year.
St. Mary's, my son Christopher married a young lady from St. Mary's, and the wedding was up there 2 years ago, so I literally was just up there 2 years ago for an extended period of time. So no.
And I would hope that you did the right local thing and had Straub's beer.
Oh, well, of course we did. It's what kept the reception going. Only John and I could talk about this, because I was actually around in 79 when you were there too, John. So
you didn't make it to the Friday night cocktail happy hour that we always have, did you?
I did.
Oh, you were there? Okay. Yeah.
I was on the road, and then if I recall back then, it would have been at the Nittany Line Inn at home. Does that sound right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yep.
And remember what one of the things that somebody leaked, because I'm really good at protecting sources, but remember in those meetings, I was the one to ask, because Joe was thinking about going into politics.
Right.
And then I would ask him, say, are you really thinking about leaving football and going into politics? And he says, I'm not going to give
answer.
Up college football to the Barry Switzers and Jackie Sherrills of the world. And then, of course, somebody took the word back to him. It wasn't me. And he blamed me. But it's like, and so at the Pitt-Penn State game, that if you remember, Pitt won in-state college, Jackie walked up to him right before the game and goes, apologize if I'm taking away your football chances, or you're taking away your chance to get into politics. And Joe just fumed.
Oh, yeah. And I knew it wasn't you, by the way. So I've always known that. It's always been
the rumor. We always had the Sever-Toretti battles with...
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I mean, Sever-Toretti was always in some kind of a battle with Collins from the Philadelphia Inquirer. It was an eventful time.
Oh, it was. It was very eventful. And Sever-Toretti, known as Tor... I remember it like it was yesterday. And Booker Moore had a problem that year, and they went through three quarterbacks that year. That was a tough year.
Mm-hmm. I still remember I was sitting there at the Pittsburgh Press, and I get a call, and they say, hey, did you know that Giuseppe Harris just got kicked off the team? And it's like, then I check it out and find it out and then write it. And so I'm just a lawyer here in State College, and he was usually somebody from the building. I mean, the staff, but in the office, would be calling me up and telling me all these different things that turn out to be true.
I know, boy. I remember that year like it was, and they played Tulane in the Liberty Bowl.
And then, of course, remember, did you have to go down like I did to the police station when the one person, one of the players in the team, ended up taking a rental car, going over to some person's house, breaking into the house, and had a gun pointed at his head?
I did not. I was not at the police station for that, but I remember the incident.
Yep.
All right. And this is after a 78 season where almost everything went perfectly.
I mean, it was incredible.
It really was. It was, and they had to kind of regain control, and did. Went 10-2 the next year. So
yeah, 7-5 that year, as I remember.
Yeah. Yep.
Including the bowl game.
Including the bowl game. All right. So, your Washington Post column yesterday, we talked about. You know, it's easy with Brady and Mahomes to talk about, but you went into other areas. It's interesting. I thought the first two items you put down, John, I think are related in a way. And one of them is, can the Bucs slow the Chiefs' track star speed, which the first time they didn't? And can the Chiefs overcome the loss of Eric Fisher at left tackle? To me, those two work hand in hand, because that's the situation the Bucs had with a remade Green Bay offensive line in the NFC Championship game. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, because when you go back and you look at that, David Bakhtiari, the left tackle, probably I think he was considered to be the best left tackle not named Trent Williams in the league last year. He was out with a knee injury because he blew out his ACL. And so, they had to replace him. And with Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett, they were able to get 5 sacks on Aaron Rodgers and 8 hits on the quarterback. And now it's even worse if you're Kansas City, because you lose your left tackle Eric Fisher, who went to the Pro Bowl, was selected for the Pro Bowl. I mean, he blows out the Achilles, and so now Mike Remmers, who is filling in for the injured Mitchell Schwartz, who's the right tackle. You have Remmers moving to left tackle, a guard Andrew Wiley moving to right tackle, Stefan Wisniewski, which of course is an interesting Penn State name. Stefan Wisniewski then goes to guard, and you look and you say that four of the five guys on the starting offensive line have been cut at least one time. And so Andy Reid's just really patching it together. But you have Patrick Mahomes, who I think is going to get sacked four times in the game, but he's still so good that he can overcome that.
Which then brings it to the next part. Brady early in the season, new offense, philosophy of Bruce Arians, the ability to throw deep. What have you seen from him in the latter part of the season as he is adjusted and Bruce has also adjusted to Brady?
Yeah, I mean, and part of the problem was, I mean, Brady's throws were just off. I mean, there was one stretch where he went 0-for-27 with three interceptions and no touchdowns and no completions, throwing the ball 21 air yards or more. But once they started getting past midseason, it kind of started after the Kansas City game in Week 12 and after the earlier game against the New Orleans Saints, that they lost 38-3, that he started connecting better, and he's getting better and better each week. And understand that in this game, you have two of the three quarterbacks who have led the league in air yards, balls thrown downfield, 21 yards plus or more. And so they tested it deep. And even in the game that Brady struggled with in the loss to Kansas City in Week 12, he did hit five passes that went 29 yards or more. So he's getting better and better at it. And, of course, I think he's adjusting to what Bruce Arians wants. And that's going to be it. But still, he has some bad quarters. Like he had the one three interceptions and three possessions that obviously was not good. But, again, I mean, he's getting better and better in that offense.
So, John, I saw Ronald Jones against Penn State when I did the Rose Bowl a few years ago. So I have an indication what a young Ronald Jones looks like. We know what Leonard Fournette's been able to do. And my broadcast partner for Penn State, Jack Ham, last year when he was at LSU, he talked about Clyde Edwards-Helaire as a tough guy to cover in the pass game. So what can running backs mean in this game? Because running backs aren't often talked about in the NFL much anymore.
Yeah, unfortunately, not as much as it should because, I mean, there is a continued trend right now that, particularly with the Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay running schemes, they're so far advanced and have been advanced for so many years that there is more running elements. I mean, you go into the playoffs, seven of the 10 top teams that made the playoffs all had good running game numbers, and even Green Bay, a team that was always a West Coast offense that would pass the ball 60%, was seventh most as far as the percentage of run plays. But the ironic part is these two teams, Tampa Bay and Kansas City, have become more passing teams. They're both 60-40 pass to run. But it's interesting on Clyde Edwards-Helaire because obviously he hasn't been the same since coming back from his injury. Now today he was completely healthy, full practice, was able to do all the things he can normally do. But once they drafted him, the scouts around the league basically said this is the best back that Andy Reid's ever had for the offense that he runs. And, of course, I mean, you know with LeSean McCoy how good he was. You know with Deuce Staley and all those different guys that have been through there that, here's the guy that he considered the best because, as Jack mentions, that he catches the ball well, he runs the ball well. He was really having a great rookie season until the injury. So, but what I'm looking at is that you go back in the first game in Week 12, I mean, because they trailed 17-0 in the first quarter, they had to throw away the running game for Tampa Bay, so they only had 12 carries for running backs, and it was maybe 16 or 17 for Kansas City. So I anticipate it's probably going to be the same thing. So one back or two backs may get 50 yards, but I don't anticipate a 100-yard back in the season, in this game, because I don't think any one back's going to get more than 16 carries.
Right. Now, you could see a combined 100 if you add in pass yards.
Yeah.
So that's what you're talking about. You're in an incredible football market. Seattle's one of the best in the country. Los Angeles is not a great football market. They just made the trade Goff to Detroit for Matthew Stafford. But they've also made other deals, including the Ramsey deal and so forth, where they have traded a lot of draft capital to make this happen. How are you viewing what the Rams are doing with draft capital versus players acquired?
Well, one thing, I mean, you almost need to do this in this division because it's so competitive. I mean, competitive to a point where, I mean, San Francisco traded for Trent Williams, traded for right. Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, the Rams, Jalen Ramsey, you know, they've made a whole bunch of trades, and certainly the Matthew Stafford one is going to make them better on offense. But at some point, it catches up to you because now with Jared Goff off the roster, they will not have a first-round pick for 8 consecutive years. Because they traded, obviously, 2022, 2023, and Goff was 2016. So no first-round picks. And at some point, I mean, unless you're just lucky in making your draft selections, and it's not like they've been loaded with draft choices, it's going to catch up to them. And then the other problem with the Stafford thing, as good as it's going to be, because their offense is going to be better, you know, they now have $42.2 million in both dead cap money for Goff, $20 million included for the Stafford deal as far as his base save. That's 23.3% of a cap that might be $180 million. And so they're not going to be able to re-sign Leonard Floyd, their good safety, John Johnson. They're going to have to cut probably one or two guys on the offensive line. So there's a good and bad to this trade. Good from the quarterback standpoint, but bad from the cap standpoint.
Now there's this interesting part. We know that the Eagles hired Nick Sirianni to be the head coach. In reality, the play caller in Indianapolis was Frank Reich. Sirianni wants to call plays in Philadelphia. Shane Waldron is the choice to be the offensive coordinator for the Seahawks. But again, he hasn't been a play caller. Yet you've done a lot of research on this, and people should not be alarmed at what they hear when they hear that, because it's actually a better track record than people realize.
Yeah, because I understand it. And again, everybody is copying the Shanahan, including Sean McVay, who learned it when he was in Washington and eventually became the play caller for the Redskins, is that what you see is that running offense is so advanced and has been for really 3 decades, because Mike Shanahan ran that. He just didn't have the motion that they run and everything else. And so the interesting part, and even Doug Peterson, who lost his job, incorporated more of the Shanahan running offense when he was in Philadelphia this past year. But that's the trend, and so you can see the track record of what happens. I mean, Sean McVay called all the plays and still has. Yet Zach Taylor gets a head coaching job, and until he got hurt, was working well with Joe Burrow at quarterback, throwing 40 passes a game. Then you saw that Matt LaFleur left the Rams and went to Tennessee, and then propped up the career of Ryan Tannehill and propped up the career of Derrick Henry, and then got the Green Bay job, and then he incorporated more running plays there. And then, of course, you have Arthur Smith, who worked several years with Shanahan in Washington, working and learning from Matt LaFleur. He has a great year this year at Tennessee, and now he's the head coach of Atlanta. So, and these guys didn't call plays. And so now what do you see in Shane, he comes to Seattle with the same possibilities, because now what he can do is go in there, take that running offense, which is very advanced, because you can have motion, you can have RPOs, you can have quicker tempo, all these different things to upgrade the Seahawks offense.
Finally, any quick thoughts on the 5 selections for the Hall of Fame?
We had the meeting 2 weeks ago. In fact, it was on a Wednesday, and we have no idea. I think we have some idea, because we know that Peyton Manning and Charles right. Woodson should be able to make it as first ballot. I still see if Calvin Johnson slides in there as a first ballot. I'm hoping that one of the offensive linemen, Alan Faneca or Tony Boselli, make it in, because we need to continue to get the offensive linemen in, and then we'll see if it's going to be good for John Lynch. But what we did is that we took it down to 10, and we voted it down to 5, but they wouldn't tell us what the 5 is.
Right.
So like you, me, and everybody else, we have to wait till Saturday night to find out the results.
I do have to ask you, outside of that, Bill Nunn is being considered. And, of course, with your Pittsburgh roots and what he meant to the Steeler organization, what did you think about seeing his name on there as a contributor?
I'm so proud, because I'm on the contributor committee, and I pushed the idea of having Bill Nunn go in. And, you know, I said a lot of things because in 1972, when I was, you know, writing for the St. Mary's Daily Press, he was the one who took in me as far as, I mean, the team approved me for training camp, but he was the one who was running training camp. And so I had to, you know, go in and get credentialed by him. And of course, you know, he was at the Courier, the Pittsburgh Courier, and as a writer. And of course, he was so far advanced because, you know, he was a great writer, but also he was the first person, and he would do it for the paper, that would go ahead and look at the you know, the black colleges and be able to go ahead and create an all-star team. And he was so good in talking to the coaches, he developed so much interest in the league, that's why he got the coaching job. And then the other part is his father, who owned the paper, and him, particularly back in 72, in the early 70s, you know, there was, you know, a lot of racism back then. And so sometimes even the top athletes coming into Pittsburgh, you know, couldn't get into hotels because they weren't allowed. So he would, they would bring him, the players and the people, into their homes to be able to take care of you know, them when they were in town. I mean, great person, great scout. I mean, certainly he had such a big impact in that 1974 draft, you know, because you know, he went and saw John Stallworth, and John had a bad time, and so he was one of the few scouts that stayed an extra day because he knew how bad the field was. And so then Stallworth got a faster run, and he ends up getting drafted and becoming a Hall of Famer. And then, of course, Donnie Schell, he found. I mean, L.C. Greenwood, he found. I mean, he was just phenomenal.
Yeah, Mel Blount. Oh, and by the way, he also said, hey, maybe in the second round you ought to take this guy from Kent State, Jack Lambert.
Yeah, I mean, he was fantastic, and his impact on that great Super Bowl run of 4 and 6 years is all there, because what would now have, there's 10 in the Hall of Fame, and he was responsible for more than half.
I always have a great time talking to you. I really appreciate the time that you give us very, very much, John. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And that is the professor, John Clayton. Always good to have him join us when he can and fit us into his busy schedule. Now doing radio out in Seattle, still covering the Seahawks a little bit too. And always good to hear from him, the former ESPN NFL insider. Still to come here on a Best of the Steve Jones Show on a Friday, NFL Network's Kim Jones coming up next as she covered the Tampa Bay Bucs, the eventual Super Bowl champs during Super Bowl week. We'll play that coming up next. Then at 4:06, it's the GM of the Kansas City Chiefs and Mount Carmel's own Brett Veach. Then at 4:35, it's Ray Denninger. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, water, wine coolers, soft drinks, snacks. They host their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Six great flavors of slushies as well. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And Steve, always in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Kim Jones, NFL Network, next half hour as we continue on a Best of the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The beverage supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Back here on a best of the Steve Jones Show, wrapping up the week here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve has been on vacation all this week, but is always in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai, all new pre-owned inventory. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. And today's show also brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. They're our sponsor every Friday, of course. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. And six great flavors of those slushies. You definitely need those for all this hot weather we've had this week. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And now we go back to NFL Network's Kim Jones. We heard from her earlier this week when she was back in State College at our alma mater covering Penn State's Pro Day. But she also covered the Tampa Bay Bucks, the eventual Super Bowl champs, down in Tampa, Florida for Super Bowl 55. And she gave us a preview back a couple of months ago getting ready for the Super Bowl.
Thanks so much, Steve. How you doing?
Doing well. How about you?
Good. Lots of snow. I hear you're getting some, too. So snowed in at the moment, but I guess that's okay.
Not quite in the same ballpark as you guys are getting, I don't think. I mean, we're like 8 or 9 inches of snow here, and
we're definitely over a foot. So we have a lot in New Jersey. Yeah, a lot of snow.
Yeah. So are you going to be allowed to go this year?
Yes, I'll go Wednesday. I mean, assuming, you know, weather permits,
right, sure.
Although by then, you know, flights will be leaving, I would assume. So, yes, I will go Wednesday. So a little bit of a different week, a little bit of a shorter week. Obviously nothing in person. This morning I spent time on the I have the Bucks this year, so on the Bucks, you know, virtual calls, Tom Brady, Bruce Arians, Jason Pierre-Paul were the main ones, and Todd Bowles were the main ones I was on. But, yeah, so, you know, it's different, but I think we've all gotten used to it with the Zooms, you know, dating back from, you know, almost a year ago, really, you know, about, what was it, maybe 10 months ago we were entrenched in Zoom. So I think we've gotten used to it.
Yeah, used to it. Well, being used to it, but you know how the job should be done. So, I mean, getting down there, what are some of the goals that they want you to accomplish by physically actually being there?
I think it's just the presence, Steve. I mean, I really do, to be honest with you. We've been working out of our homes during the weeks, and then I generally go to a game. Lots of Buffalo this year, some Washington, a Jets and Giants game or two along the way, but not many with my local teams. But mostly Buffalo in a distant second, I think, would probably be Washington in terms of the teams I saw the most this season. So, you know, I think it's more the presence. It's to be on the scene. I will be, I think at least part of the time I'll be at the Bucks Hotel. The funny part there is, you know, they don't really have to stay in it until the night before the game, I don't believe. So, you know, we'll be there. We'll have a presence at the stadium. I'll do the earlier shift on Sunday, so I'll be at the hotel. My colleague James Palmer will be doing the Bucks from the stadium, and then at the moment. I can't remember, actually, to be honest with you, who's covering the Chiefs. But for us, I think Jeff Chedia, I believe, and maybe Steve White. So, you know, it'll be presence-wise kind of the same. It's just, you know, all of our methodology now is just so much different. And I'm not completely down on Zoom calls. I don't want us to go to those completely. I don't want us to just be virtual. But I do think players and coaches, I can speak only for the NFL, I think have gone out of their way to understand this is the only way we can do our jobs this year. And for the most part, they've really been outstanding. Very, very few have been what I would consider to be subpar, and a lot have been, you know, great to beyond great. So I think that they've tried to help us as much as they could in terms of as interviewees, you know, in a league where we do depend on being in the locker room.
What's interesting is that, and I've told people, because you and I have both covered Super Bowl media day before, and, you know, as much as you try to get what you need, there's also a wide range of individuals at Super Bowl media day that don't cover the NFL.
Right.
Did you find that the calls this morning felt more like, I mean, obviously it's the Super Bowl, but felt more like a normal game week because it was a Zoom call?
Yeah, it was 100% either football questions or at least football-related questions. You know, it doesn't mean they're all about the game. You know, as you know and as the listeners know, it can be about Tom Brady and his future, but that is still a football topic.
Yes,
you know, Tom Brady on, does he wish he had some of Mahomes' gifts? That is still a football topic.
Right.
Osa Umenyora called in. I don't know if Osa's in London right now. He lives in London. I don't know if he's in London right now or not, but literally called in, and he is a member of the media, literally called in just to say hello to Jason Pierre-Paul, who absolutely loved it and laughed hysterically for about 20 seconds. So, but still, I'm not going to tell OC and Jason they're not football guys because they are ultimate football guys. So, you know, there was none of the, you know, people with the funny hats or, you know, I think you have to go back a little bit for this, the women asking for marriage proposals. You know, there was none of that stuff on Zoom.
Right. No, I can remember being at one and I was talking with Michael Robinson, who was at the Seahawks, and it was just the two of us chit-chatting because we were done. And Hank Azaria comes over and wants to ask questions. I said, this didn't quite...
Right.
Great. Great. Moe's Tavern wants questions.
Right.
You mentioned the Bills, and I'll get back to this game in a moment. Since you saw the Bills enough this year, and you told the great story to us the last time about Terry Pegula bringing Sean McDermott on his way through here to talk to Cale Sanderson.
Yes.
What do you see in the organization of the Buffalo Bills led by Sean McDermott that they might be built for the long haul in this thing?
Yeah, and Brandon Bean, who I think by at least one measure, and there will be more to come, you know, is executive of the year in terms of the GM of the Buffalo Bills, Brandon Bean. It's football genius. I've said this publicly. They have now given the struggling teams a blueprint on how to turn it around in 4 years. I know teams that I think are going to sail past 4 years without turning it around. They have been very smart. They have taken chances. They traded up to get Josh Allen, the same draft. When they had earlier watched, you know, traded the pick to Kansas City, which got Mahomes. The next year they trade up to get Josh Allen. They had conviction about Josh Allen very early because I was there for it. I heard them. They believed in him. They believed in how smart he is, and he's very bright. They believed in his athletic talent, and they certainly believed in his cannon for an arm. And this is amid, you know, the first 2 years of Josh's career when, you know, every expert alive couldn't wait to tell you that a quarterback can't improve his accuracy.
Right.
And that's just not true because Josh, through a lot of hard work and through an incredible array of playmakers around him, they don't have everything, but they have great playmakers around him, the final piece being Stephon Diggs, of course, who fit in beautifully in Buffalo and absolutely loves it in Buffalo and was, I think, as crushed as any player I've ever seen after a game where the season ends. It means a lot to Stephon Diggs, who I do think is probably in one of those categories of, you know, players that we like to misunderstand because he's been terrific as a Buffalo Bill. So I think that when you talk about Buffalo, it's about getting key pieces in free agency. You have to draft well. I think they're still looking for the real Ed Oliver to stand up. He was a big draft pick a couple of years ago.
Exactly.
AJ Epenesa, who, you know, I thought there was a chance maybe they'd draft Yetur. They drafted Epenesa. He was very much up and down. He ended up, I think, losing too much weight to enter the season, and then it's a battle to gain weight to enter a season. So I think he had a little bit of a literally up and down rookie season. I know, you know, Yetur certainly had his moments in Carolina. But they really and the word culture is one I've come to hate, because I think it's much more about people than culture, and I think culture makes it inanimate, which it's not. Yeah. It's about the people, and they've brought in the right people. And I'll leave you with I know this is a very long answer, Steve, but Tre'Davious White is a cornerback in this league, and sometimes cornerbacks are looked at a certain way, and so they've earned it over the years. They're obviously on an island often. They're often one of the most self-assured / cocky players on the field because they have to be, and we've seen, you know, obviously the Hall of Famers are just, you know, they're wondrous to watch play cornerback in this league. Well, Tre'Davious White is everything without having any of that. And I don't think all of that, by the way, is a bad thing. I don't think confidence is a bad thing. I never have. I don't think a cocky athlete is a bad thing, because sometimes that's what makes them who they are. Tre'Davious White is a wonderful teammate. He was Sean McDermott's first draft pick before Bean even came on board. He said at one point on Zoom this year that occasionally he'll be in the facility and he'll stop Sean when he sees him and thank him for taking, quote-unquote, a chance on him as his first-ever draft pick. They have done – they have in Josh Allen and Tre'Davious White, and the list goes on in terms of the defensive side of the ball, but they have two of the finest leaders you would ever want an organization to have, and I will never discount that.
So let's stay on the leadership part of this for a moment, but shift franchises, going from Western New York to Northern Jersey, suburban New York, and that's the Jets. They hire Robert Saleh to come in to be the head coach. What's the initial read about what he can mean to their organization?
I think a lot. Saleh was very impressive, I thought, at his opening press conference. Now, I think almost all of the men we've seen hired in this hiring cycle, you know, they're all Zoom calls and everything else, I think they have all seemed to me to be slightly more nervous than I would have anticipated. But I also think, you know, whatever the age they are, and Houston hired a 65-year-old, the Jets hired, I don't even know, Saleh's what, 37, 38, something like that. And then there are a couple, I think, younger than Saleh even, but or right around his age. But, you know, they've not really done this as head coaches for the most part. So, you know, the nerves on opening day, so to speak, are something that I certainly would not hold against them. They did surprise me a little bit, but then when I thought about it, I thought, well, these guys were coordinators and assistant coaches. You know, they weren't doing Zooms all the time, you know, like all the head coaches were and like all the big players were. They were doing Zooms once a week maybe, or if that, in their previous jobs as assistants or coordinators. So, you know, I think in Saleh they have a very, very charismatic person. I think they have someone who players will relate to and want to play for and want to play hard for, and you can never discount that in the NFL. And I think they have someone who is going to be the coach of the entire team, which is what the Johnsons wanted this time around, as opposed to a coordinator who spends most of his time on defense, like Todd Bowles did, and Todd Bowles is as great a man as you'll find in this league, or on offense as Adam Gase did. So they got their quote-unquote football CEO in Saleh. It's going to be a matter of him learning on the job, putting the pieces together, and having some of his enthusiasm for the game, frankly, translate to players, you know, who had a very depressing season this year, for lack of a better word.
So you mentioned Todd Bowles. Obviously, the one time Kansas City played Tampa Bay this year, Tyreek Hill had a first quarter to remember.
Yes.
I think something like 133
yards. Numbers were crazy.
Yards.
Yep.
Yeah, off the charts. Todd Bowles is a is a really terrific defensive mind. And his top six guys in this secondary, Kim, you can correct me on this, I think are all 24 years and younger.
They're very young. I know that, and I know Antoine Winfield Jr. is one of them. But yes, they're very young.
Oh, Winfield is. I saw him last year when I did the game out in Minnesota.
Yep.
I said, "Man, this guy can play."
Mm-hmm.
What did he learn out of that? And that they feel that with now just more experience, because they've got 10 more games under their belt, did he get into that what they have learned from that experience that they can apply now?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think that he looks at that game as the one where after that they started to really improve. He talked today about, and their names escape me at the moment, but the position coaches dealing with and coaching up those really young secondary guys and how they started to really come on after that game. So I think, the biggest thing in sports, Steve, as you know, is confidence. So they will at least go into this game with more confidence, believing that they have been playing better and that they're better equipped second time around in a season to see Patrick Mahomes and company. Doesn't mean you're going to have great success against them, of course, but I think they at least go into it in a better frame of mind. They also have, a front that can be the secondary's best friend. So, as you know, so they also have a front that's been getting after it. Jason Pierre-Paul, Barrett, and Dominican Sue with a push up the middle. They got Vita Vea back, which they never thought they were going to get Vita Vea back. Enormous guy, I think, out of Washington, if memory is correct from the combine. But just an enormous human being who, they figured they'd see next season. He worked his way back. He's back. That'll be a big thing. That'll be a big part of Sunday's game, I think. And really, when you talk about the front, they're going to face backups at tackle. When Jason Pierre-Paul was asked that today, he said, that's their problem. Like, I don't care about their tackles. And that's Jason. Jason does not care about their tackles. He just cares about getting to the quarterback and or stopping the run, because he's good at that as well. But he, they don't need to worry about the Chiefs' problems. They have enough issues in terms of dealing with the Chiefs. But I do think this second time around, Tampa is, A better football team, and B, may get a break because of the situation at tackle for the Chiefs. Yeah. It's tough to win in this league with good tackles, let alone guys who are in a fill-in capacity because of injury.
Yeah, because I saw Vea in the Fiesta Bowl against Penn State when Saquon went 92 yards for a touchdown, by the way. So I saw Vita Vea play.
Yeah.
And by the way, they just went through the same situation with Green Bay. They were using backup tackles, and they just crushed those guys. Off
that's a good
the
point.
Edge.
Yep, they did. You're right.
Yeah,
yep.
And so one final question. Here's the obligatory Brady question. Did you learn anything, either from everybody else or just from him himself, maybe something that after all the years that you've covered him, been around him, that maybe even you didn't know before?
Probably not, to be honest with you, but I do think he does... he did a nice job. Listen, it was 45 minutes. That's a long session. It's 45 minutes. He had, a political question, which, that's kind of the times we're in. He had a couple questions from kids, which he responded to very well, as you'd probably expect. He had questions about his longevity, about how long he's going to do it. I did think it, somewhat interesting that he does think he'll know when he's finished, and he clearly doesn't think he's at that point. Now, which I understand is the answer, but at some point that answer is going to change. It just hasn't yet. I do think he's been rejuvenated under Bruce Arians. He's a different personality than Bill Belichick. I think that's stating the absolute obvious. But Tom also said that he and Bill have a great relationship, and that, he's so grateful for his time there. So I thought it was a chance by Tom to kind of take a high road, and he did.
Yeah.
And it doesn't surprise me that he said that necessarily, but hearing it live, you just kind of said, oh, okay, there's the Belichick answer that, an awful lot of people, especially in New England, are going to look for, and it will be one that they can appreciate. Listen, Tom gets it. He's the biggest star in the league. The league, I'm sure, is absolutely thrilled he's in this Super Bowl, and why wouldn't they be? And then on the other side, you have a young quarterback who conceivably might break all of Brady's records. Not going to be easy to get to 10 Super Bowls, but, you know, you look at Patrick Mahomes and you think if anyone can get, like, a pretty good head start on it, you know, it certainly is him.
Yeah, this will be 55. This will be 10. It's nearly one out of every, what, 9 Super Bowls he's been in.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's just amazing.
Other than that, you mentioned the word appreciation. I always have appreciated you. Thank you so much, Kim, for your time. Very much.
Anytime, Steve. Thanks so much.
And that is NFL Network's Kim Jones. Now, before we go to the top of the hour, we did not get to mention this earlier in the week, but I wanted to at least acknowledge it now. Of course, we'll get into it more next week when Steve returns. And that is the retirement of 76ers TV announcer on NBC Sports Philadelphia, Mark Zumoff. Earlier this week, he announced his retirement. Kind of came out of nowhere. Shocked a lot of people, but he did announce his retirement after 39 years covering the team, first as the pre- and post-game and halftime show host, I believe, and then, of course, been doing the play-by-play for almost for 27 years now. So it's going to be sad to see him go. It's going to be weird not seeing him being the voice that you always welcomed into your home if you're a Sixer fan every season. I'll certainly miss him. He's certainly meant a lot to a lot of people's careers, too, as, of course, as you know, he has made some appearances in Steve's broadcasting class, and he's just that kind of guy. He has his own broadcast coaching school online. He's meant a whole heck of a lot to me in my career, and I have the privilege of knowing him as well, and it's always great to have him on the show with Steve that he's joined us. So best of luck to Mark Zumoff in his retirement, and obviously congratulations on what's been a monumental career and certainly has set the standard for us here in the industry. So at least wanted to acknowledge that before the week's end. Today's show has been brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And every Friday show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. 4 o'clock hour coming at you next. Starting things off with the Mount Carmel native and GM of the Kansas City Chiefs himself, Brett Veach, in one of our biggest interviews of the year. That's going to be followed by Ray Dittinger as well at 4:35. All to come here on the Steve Jones Show, a best of here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.